All atomic structures which compose this planet and all of the things about it do not, shall we say, vibrate in the same plane of relationship from the emanating source of the fountainhead. Therefore your five physical senses of touch, taste, smell, seeing, and hearing would be quite useless here, as they have been evolved to function in atomic structures and frequencies which were of a lower and different relationship to the fountainhead. However, to us our world is in a general sense quite as solid as yours. Our various functions of sight, sound, hearing, smell and feeling are of course evolved to function in this particular plane or dimension. Here again I must draw a similarity picture. While you say in a spiritual sense God supplies your every need, yet you find it necessary to plant the seed and harvest the crop, or you must mine and smelt metal, or in whatever particular direction you may look, you must engage in work for the necessities of life. In our world God is likewise the fountainhead of all supply. However, we do not find it necessary to earn the daily essentials with the sweat of our brow. In our understanding God has become the supreme energizing force which feeds our bodies, which clothes us, and which in short does everything for us without the expenditure of time and energy, or a great preponderance of machinery. I may point out that in your Bible you will find accounts of certain avatars or holy men who fed themselves directly from the fountainhead and so lived for many days without food or drink passing their lips, nor did they suffer any discomfort in so doing. Tonight we are ringing a great golden bell in the central chapel, so that its vibrations will carry across the distances which separate us in a physical sense from mankind who lives on many planets, and each note of this golden bell carries with it the united and concerted prayer of love and goodwill to man wherever he may be found. On the next occasion my brother Malvar will attend you. Until then I, Shattuck, wish upon you all the graces of the Almighty God. Chapter 4 Greetings again, my friends, and all my brothers and sisters on the earth plane. May I say first that I am very happy to be with you again and to thank you for the gracious way in which you received my brother during my enforced absence. I have decided that inasmuch as you have begun to understand that the factors of energy and mass are but relative and that they depend primarily for expression upon the source or fountainhead, and that these equations of energy and mass are but the outward intelligence expressed from the fountainhead, I have been very anxious that you understand this principle thoroughly. And it is partly because of this that I will discuss the topic of today, which, although it does not necessarily pertain to the expression of life on Venus, is pertinent and vital for your understanding and peace of mind in the future generations of mankind upon the Earth plane. Our topic today will deal with spacecraft and the historical background of the Earth with regard to interplanetary travel. When your scientists touched off the first atom bomb, it had an immediate and far-reaching effect into many of the astral worlds and in some of the dimensions which are more closely related to the Earth. About five planets, including Venus, were immediately startled and gravely concerned with what might be the misuse of atomic power. Clarion, another planet, not generally known to the Earth people, was another one so concerned, likewise Mars. Eros also was alerted and was swung into an orbit which would bring it in close conjunction with the Earth. These planets all sent out spacecraft or used other means to explore the Earth to find out all possible ramifications which might be involved in these atomic explosions. The people of the Earth during the following years were tremendously excited by the appearance and strange behavior of these various types of craft. One type in particular, which you call flying saucers, has caused the greatest consternation and conjecture, particularly to the Earth scientist. He is at a loss to explain the sudden appearance and disappearance of these craft. Also, he is flabbergasted with the tremendous speeds which they can attain and which he can only track on his radar screen. He is also bewildered by their appearance of being at a white hot heat or cooling to a dull cherry red. To interject a little mystery here, let me say there is no heat produced in the use of these craft. But first I must digress to explain to you some of the historical background which is necessary to understand your present situation. About 500,000 years ago, the people of Mars were commuting regularly to the Earth by spacecraft. They had established a colony on the southern edge of what is now called the Gobi Desert at the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. They were, however, set upon from time to time by savage bands of native Earthmen who roamed about the Earth at that time. In the last of these forays, a large group of Martians barely escaped with their lives into the nearby hills, where they remained hidden and lost to their countrymen, who finally abandoned the idea of colonization on the Earth. They were a peace-loving people, and although they had weapons at their disposal that would have annihilated these savage Earthmen, yet they refused to use them, semicolon, and so the Earth swung in its orbit, unattended for several hundred thousand years until the coming of the Lemurians from the planet Lemuria, which is about 700 light-years, figured in our planetary system of light measurement, away from our solar system. You may wonder how these men traversed this vast distance without consuming the best part of their lives. It was through the principle of change of frequency relationship which enabled the spacecraft to travel through inner space at speeds approximately 10 times that of your known speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. Therefore, the distance from Lemuria to our solar system could be traversed in a very small fraction of the time which you might assume would normally be necessary, in other words, about 5 or 6 years. During this journey, the ship was flown and controlled by a robot calculator. The 11 who occupied the ship remained in a state of suspended animation, something like a cataleptic hypnotic trance. It was about 160,000 years ago in your Earth time that the great spacecraft crashed on the Gobi Desert, very close to where the Martians formerly lived. Inside were these 11 men on this craft, which had come, as you have been told, from a planet much closer to the central vortex of the material universe and our own solar system. This was the planet Lemuria, about 3 times the size of the Earth and warmed by the rays of a huge brilliant copper-colored sun to which it was fairly close. The people of this planet are, compared to your Earth people, of a very large and tall stature. They are also advanced in their spiritual evolution to a point which is about one halfway between the scientific plane of Mars and the spiritual plane of Venus. We had long been in telepathic communication with these people, and it had been their first attempt with spacecraft at such vast distances which had ended so disastrously on Earth. It had not been their desire to land on Earth but rather on Venus. But they had been deflected from their true course by the strong magnetic field of a huge sun they passed on their journey here. You are all somewhat familiar with the story of Mu or Lemuria on your Earth, and how the science of these 11 masters or supermen was handed down through the ages so that it became a vital science of that civilization you call Atlanta. It was the people of Atlanta who still used spacecraft and were, through the knowledge and use of the principle I have explained to you, able to float silently through the air in weightless craft which they propelled by using force beams or energy beams, using as their source of energy the magnetic fluxes which surround the Earth. Near the close of this civilization, there was a great deal of corruption which began to enter into a heretofore very wonderful way of life, and which was something like the utopia which the philosophers are wont to talk about. It was at this time that an avatar who was living on Venus made a pilgrimage to Atlanta, semicolon, and there, after proving his mastership by placing the flame of life upon a crystal clear quartz block which he materialized from energy, he ruled for the space of 428 days, during which time he wrote a book about life and placed it beneath the flame. It was his warning when he left that nothing should be taken from or added to this book, or else Atlanta would perish. Your history will tell you the sad tale. Sometime after the disappearance of the Avatar, whom you call Christ, a group of Atlantean men, women and children wishing to preserve their way of life, escaped in a spacecraft to Mars. It was the descendants of these people who were contacted by your Earthman named Fry, as well as numerous others. Daniel W. Fry, author of The White Sands Incident. I am bringing you this story so that I can show you how these craft or flying saucers work, and which will also point out to your Earth scientists the underlying principles which they are now hopelessly trying to duplicate. The trip the Earthman took in this flying saucer was quite real. However, it did not take place in the dimension or realm with which he is familiar. This saucer is guided by the mother ship, which is a huge cigar-shaped craft which usually hovers motionless out in space at about 10,000 miles distance from the surface. The craft is pilotless and is flown by a beam of energy which projects like an invisible searchlight from the mothership. This beam is hollow like a tube, in the center of which the saucer always remains. The outer shell of this tube-like beam is a composite form of innumerable wave shapes or intelligences, which have been taken from a source coming from the fountain road semicolon and through processes which are known to them as well as to ourselves. These energies are so directed that they can change the relationship of the atomic structures which compose the metals of the ship and thus render it weightless, as it does not now, in this condition, reside in the spectra of atomic frequencies which are subject to the gravitational pull of the planet Earth. This gravitational field, by the way, is merely a highly charged field of force which has as its origin a condition caused by friction between the outer shell of the Earth and the inner molten core. Now, as I have told you, contrary to general belief, there is no heat involved in the glowing appearance of a flying saucer. This is caused simply by the reflection and refraction similar to that principle which causes a rainbow. In other words, as the basic frequency relationships of the atoms composing the metals are changed, these atoms will, in assuming their place in molecular structures, reproduce such reflection or refraction from various light sources, such as sunlight, daylight or moonlight. The sudden stopping and starting these strange craft is now likewise more easily understood. If you have watched the pencil-like beam of a searchlight piercing the sky at night, you will see its extreme tip move at a tremendous rate of speed across the sky, and yet if you were standing by the searchlight, you would see that it moves very slowly and but a few inches at a time. This is exactly how these saucers are operated. They are flown up and down, over and around, and in any direction the operator chooses by simply moving the searchlight beam projector. As I have explained, this beam is a hollow tube of energy, and by the simple law of adhesive energy the saucer could not get out of this beam. Now I see that your bodies are beginning to tire, although I know your minds are eager for more information. On my next visit I will give information which is more pertinent to life on Venus. I have brought you the topic of discussion today for several obvious reasons. Inasmuch as all of the underlying principles, as well as the motivating factors, are all interwoven, they are of concern to all races or groups of people who are in a more advanced state of evolution than the Earth peoples. I might add one thing more before I leave, as I have heard you question the validity of flying saucer contacts or of other such similar appearances of spacecraft to seemingly obscure people. These are primarily somewhat in the nature of testings or psychological experiments, and have been meant in a mild way to shock the Earth people from their ruts of a materialistic complacency. You are right about one thing, however. We, or any other advanced race, do not and would not seriously affect your own chosen way of life. It is the infinite wisdom of the God who created you in your finite way that you must find your way back to the fountainhead by developing your own spiritual evolution. And so until such future time I will await your convenience. Brother Malvar. Chapter 5. Judging by the thoughts which are received by me from you, you are quite anxious that we shall begin our exploration directly on the planet Venus. This I will be most happy to do, as I believe that by now your minds have been sufficiently freed from the bondage of the limited Earth life concepts around you. I do not wish to be misconstrued in my attitude regarding your Earth planet. It is a wondrously conceived and properly constituted place of life for people in your particular phase of development semicolon, and while your history reveals that there have been some good cycles and some not so good, yet with all it can be said that you are admirably situated in a world which was conceived as a battleground and testing place between your emotions and carnal desires, and as an actual starting place in your spiritual evolution. Of course I am making an exception of the many great old souls who have reincarnated from time to time into your way of life, and by the substance and strength of their wisdom have acted as a leavening agent which was a vital and necessary factor in maintaining the continuity of life in the lower orders of development in which they were working. Perhaps at some later time I will give you some more pertinent facts which will relate to the future history of your planet, for not only is your past history well known to us here on Venus, but your future has also been written. In going to the planet Venus I will ask one thing of you, that you must remember that while you may see some things which may in some way remind you of your more familiar planet, yet as I have explained, there is nothing similar or comparable to what you call weight or mass, and while all things on Venus do have weight and solidity, but only to those who have evolved into this plane and are properly constituted so that the elemental substructure of their minds and bodies are in close relationship with the elements around them, which is, of course, exactly the same relationship which your minds and bodies bear toward the elemental structures of the Earth plane. The difference being, if you will pardon my being repetitious, in the relationship of that hackneyed word dimension. I do not like this word as it has a confining sound and relates to such limitations as measurements, or is suggestive of limited confined spaces. However, I must speak in your language and in such a way as you will best understand me. Now that we are on common ground, we shall approach the planet Venus and begin what I hope will be a profitable as well as enlightening venture, as has been done many times before. We will use as our vehicle our astral body, and with our mind firmly ensconced within its comforting closeness, we will see what happens. But lo, I have hardly spoken before we are there, at least to our first stopping point, which is somewhat outside the astral shell of the planet, or as your astronomers call a similar one around the Earth, the ionosphere. This astral shell around Venus differs somewhat from that of the Earth planet. However, such differences are not so important as to warrant a further discussion. We will instead merely say that its function is somewhat similar to that of the Earth, and that it is a protective shield against some of the dangerous radiations which come from various sources in outer space. Your astronomers, in looking at this planet, see only vague masses of cloud-like substances which seem at all times to be a complete envelope. Actually, no Earthman has seen the surface of the planet through a telescope or with any other device he may use in conjunction with these optical instruments. I would like to point out that there are many Earth people who have visited the planet on astral flights and have returned to Earth with different and varying versions of their experiences. This is very easily explained, as they see everything in direct proportion to their particular stage of spiritual evolution. Many people could take a trip round the Earth, and while they may all see the same sights, no two people can describe these things in the same way, nor do they see them in the same way. This factor is much more manifest in their astral flights to Venus and in seeing what they do, inasmuch as the factors relating to conception are of a much more spiritual nature. Their thought patterns and philosophies in their Earth life have preconditioned them so that they mentally select, as it were, such facets of perception as are compatible to these thought patterns. However, I believe that through the channel of your mind, we here on the planet Venus can express and describe to the Earth people a somewhat broader and more scientifically factual concept of what we actually have here. There are unfortunately very few clear channels, and even much that has been given has been wasted on the desert sands of the minds of the average Earthman. It was hinted previously regarding the appearance of Venus that, as it appeared to be cloaked in cloudy masses, the Earth astronomers naturally drew the conclusion that Venus was a wet or watery place, and that any life on this planet would therefore have to be aqueous in nature. This is only partially true. While there are clouds in the atmosphere of Venus, they are not wet, damp, vaporous masses, but the moisture which is needed to support the luxuriant growth of vegetation. I can assure you that the planet is anything but aqueous. In explaining the vaporous cloud mass appearance, let us refer back to our original concept, and that is the relationship of elemental substances. They are due to the difference in relationship of atomic structures which compose the planet's atmosphere, and the difference of frequency vibration rates. This, of course, therefore makes these structures invisible to the Earthman in what he conceives to be around the planet. He has simply jumped to the wrong conclusion that because he may see this envelope as a cloudy mass, that he may be able to obtain some refractory analysis. This may lead him further astray in his diagnosis, for he has seen nothing more than that which is contained in our extra-heavy thick ionosphere and the very deep atmospheric envelope which, of course, surrounds the entire planet. Venus has no axis inclination as has your Earth, therefore there are no seasonal changes. It is roughly one-third larger than the Earth and is also much closer to the Sun. I will not give you the figures on our Venusian measurements, as we have small use for such things, But if you wish to satisfy your curiosity, any of your encyclopedias will give you this information. We here on Venus have an entirely different concept of time and space, and such concepts as are used by the Earth astronomers are somewhat reminiscent of the days when we, as children on a similar planet, played with mud pies. Getting down farther into the atmosphere of our planet, we will begin to see many strange, at least to your eyes, and wonderful sights. The surface of this planet encompasses many and highly diversified geological formations. There are many vast mountain ranges, great lakes, rivers and oceans. You may think at first that this reminds you of your own planet, yet there are many differences. The air itself does not seem to be as heavy, but it gives you a wonderful feeling of exhilaration. This is due partly to the fact that Venus has a much more highly charged magnetic field. This, in combination with other factors, creates a gas somewhat similar to ozone, which you may remember having smelled after a thunderstorm. There are other differences which relate to weather conditions and the lack of your more familiar seasonal changes, due to the difference in the intensity of the magnetic structure of the atmosphere and the ionosphere. All such weather factors are much less violent than on your Earth. Also, we must remember that all elemental structures surrounding this planet are much closer in their linkage or relationship to the fountainhead, and, shall we say, more intelligent and less obstreperous. There are none of the cold winters or snowy regions on this planet. Neither are there the vast arid desert regions or the steaming hot jungles. All in all, the planet is a much more well-behaved vessel of life, partially, as I have said, because of a more highly evolved structural density, and partially because we here on this planet know how to control weather conditions. The Avatar Christ calmed the raging seas and caused the winds to cease their howling, and then boldly walked upon the face of the now calm water. May I say humbly that we here on Venus also know of these things. Another thing which you will notice is the iridescent glowing beauty. Also, the vegetation itself may display a riotous beauty of color and contrast. The seas and waters have a radiant opalescent beauty, and the very mountains seem to be composed of the essence of mother of pearl. All over, and about and around all of this, there are hanging multitudes of rainbow-hued auroras. Dewdrops shoot forth radiant shafts of light which are far more brilliant than any you have ever before witnessed. You may see a countless number of strange and fantastically hued birds and huge butterflies whose wings seem to be encrusted with a million jewels. You may taste the waters of some tumbling stream and find them sweet beyond all previous taste experiences, or you may come upon one of the many cities which seem to hang half suspended between earth and sky, which may remind you somewhat of the pictures in some childhood fairy book of the fairy castle on top of a high hill. Yes, my friends, Venus is a wonderful, beautiful place, and a rich reward which may be well earned through the many thousands of reincarnations and earth lives. On my next visit, we will seek out one of these fairy castle-like cities, and we shall enter in and meet some of those who have earned and richly deserve this reward. And yet, even as it must always be so, our respective planes of life are so widely separated that we must return to our respective positions. But we will meet again soon. Brother Malvar. Art Pictures. Chapter 6. Although only a few hours have passed since my last visit, conditions are so propitious that it was deemed advantageous that I again make contact. I hope that you will pardon my intrusion in your daily Earth life routine. So we will resume our little trip where it was left off the previous evening. Now we are again back on the surface of Venus, and we find ourselves standing in a beautiful forest glade, and although it is quite familiar to me, I see in your mind that you are almost overwhelmed with the beauty. For the benefit of your Earth brothers, let us sit down upon this grassy bank beside a pool, so that I may not only explain more fully these things about you, but that I may also clear up some of the salient points which I see are not quite transparent. As you look about you, you see many tall trees which stretch hundreds of feet into the air, and the overhanging branches seem to reach out and form a canopy which delicately laces the radiant solar energy that comes from the great golden orb which shines above. And while it is the same sun which shines on your Earth, it has here quite a different appearance, not very small and white and extremely brilliant, but it is large and of a soft golden-yellow color which can be easily looked into. As you have been told, the Sun is not as commonly supposed, a massive disintegrating atomic energy which is dissipating itself at white-hot heat, but is instead a radiant energy projector which converts energy and reflects its light and other associated energy fluxes into what you term your three-dimensional world. This energy source is of course the fountainhead. Due to the difference in atomic constituents and frequency vibration in the atmosphere and astral shell of Venus, the Sun is therefore able to transmit or reflect a somewhat different frequency spectra upon Venus, lower orders of the more actinic rays being properly filtered out, as these rays are merely byproducts in frequency transmission from the radiant source or Sun. I see that you are looking about you and gazing with wonder and awe at the display of the many strange and different species of plant, bird and insect life. Over there is an orchid-like plant which thrives on air, and that it has a blossom so large you could easily lie down in it. Floating upon the surface of the lake you see another aqueous plant growing before you, exactly similar to the one you call the lotus, which was brought to your earth by one of your holy men who had made an astral flight to this planet, and had actually lived here at one time. However, it is impossible at this time to describe all of these many and wonderful flowers and trees and the busy insect and bird life which lives and flourishes among them. Let it be said, however, and you'll agree with me on looking about you, that it exceeds beyond the wildest reach of the imagination what an Earthman might be capable of envisioning. Many Earth people have, in moments of psychic transmission or experience, caught a glimpse of this fairyland you see about you, and thought they were in heaven, and while this is partially true in comparison to your Earth planet, yet we here on Venus are still in a comparatively low state of evolution, and we are now able to see that stretching far ahead of us there are various and innumerable realms or planes which far exceed our Venusian planet, not only in beauty but in a spiritual way of life in which the people of those places live. As I have told you previously, some of the more spiritually advanced peoples of the Earth have had contacts or flights to Venus, several of whom are living in your day and age. However, they have all returned with different and diverse reports as to what they have seen on this planet. As I have said, this is of course due to the extent of their spiritual perception. You may liken the planet Venus in certain ways to your Earth world. As you know, there are countless expressions and ways of life upon your planet. There are the savages in the jungle, as you call them, and there are the Orientals, and there are numerous separations which you call nations, each maintaining a distinct and separate way of life, which is characterized by differences of clothing, speech, forms of government, and so on. In all your previous accounts of the planet Venus, you may have been given the impression that there was only one race or type of people living here. This is entirely erroneous. There are many kinds of people living on this planet, the difference being, however, in the stage of their spiritual evolution or position in the spectra of frequency vibration into which they have automatically gravitated. It is somewhat like the keys upon the piano are divided into groups and octaves. Your Earthman divides these frequency vibrations into relative planes of consciousness, as physical appurtenances. It is different on Venus, inasmuch as the physical does not exist in your generally conceived idea of material or physical. Therefore, such divisions as planes or strata reside in a spiritual concept. When a discarnate entity evolves through time onto the planet Venus, he usually finds himself in one of the lower states of consciousness. He will therefore through time, as you call time, or cycles, incarnate or evolve to this planet, and if he is advancing properly, he will each time rematerialize into a higher state of consciousness. On your Earth planet, the divisions of life are very strongly marked in the physical or material sense. The black man born and raised in the jungle would not feel at home living among your modern skyscrapers. Therefore, there are mental as well as geographical separations. On Venus, this is somewhat different. We might liken them to the differences or levels in one of your skyscrapers, semicolon, and while all of the people here remain in harmonious relationship with each other as they are vitally interested in each other's welfare, they of course know as individuals their proper place in the scale of their evolution on this planet. because you have not yet been completely separated from your physical body and have therefore not advanced in your perceptions, you will have to remain content and satisfied with seeing the dimensional plane upon which I, in my plane and those who are like me, are living. So to avoid confusion, you will not be permitted to see the lower realms of consciousness which exist on this planet.